for joining us. I'm Diane Rehm. The effect of a controversial new immigration law passed Friday in Arizona has already moved beyond the state's borders. It's thrust the Obama administration and U.S. lawmakers into a debate over when and how to overhaul federal immigration legislation. And it's also threatened to undermine key bipartisan support for a climate and energy bill. Joining me in the studio to talk about the consequences of the Arizona law, Angela Kelly of the Center for American Progress, Mark Krikorian of the Center for Immigration Studies, and Laura Meckler. She's with the Wall Street Journal. We've already had many, many messages posted on our website and on Facebook. We do invite you to join us, 800-433-8850. Send us your email to drshow@wamu.org. You can also send us a tweet. Good morning to all of you.
Good morning.
Laura Meckler, let's get you to give us a sense of what the Arizona law says.
The Arizona law is now the strictest in the country on immigration. And what it says is that requires the police to question anybody who they reasonably suspect is here in the country illegally, to question them and ask them to show documents to prove that they are, in fact, legally here. As a corollary to that, it requires immigrants to always have those documents with them showing that they are here legally in case they are questioned. It also makes it illegal under state law to be in the U.S. Illegally without a proper permission.
So is what you're saying that an officer of the law can approach someone, doesn't have to be in the face of committing a crime,
or correct,
he can just be walking down the street, exactly, she can just be walking down the street.
And that's what makes this different than normal enforcement of immigration laws. Obviously, if somebody commits a crime and they're determined to be here illegally, that would be sort of in the normal course of things. They might start going through procedures that could lead to deportation. What this says is that if you're just there and the police suspect that you are illegal, then they can, in fact, question you.
Now, the governor says that this law is in keeping with federal law. Where does it go farther?
Well, I think that go further than federal law. Well, in fact, that very point that we just discussed is the that somebody can be questioned without having been in the course of committing another crime, and without having anything particular to trigger it. Just the idea that you can just essentially ask somebody for their papers on the street. And, it could be – the question, of course, it raises lots of questions, but, how do the police know who is suspected to be illegally? That's one of the questions, and a lot of others as well.
Laura Meckler, she's White House correspondent for the Wall Street Journal. Angie Kelly, you mm-hmm. don't agree with this.
I don't agree with the law, and I'm not alone in not agreeing with the law. Interestingly, the Arizona Association of Chiefs of Police didn't agree with the law. A lot of state and local elected officials have come forward not agreeing with the law, saying that, it's too sweeping. It's impossible to tell whether somebody is here legally or illegally just by looking at them. It's sort of a funny side note that Congressman Bill Bray, a Republican from California, said, well, when asked about this, maybe you could tell looking at their shoes whether they're here illegally or not, which is, of course, preposterous. And so how this law is being interpreted is, frankly, that it's a bullseye. It's a target on the back of the foreign-born community, the Hispanic community of Arizona, which is substantial. It's 30% of Arizonans are foreign-born or of Latino descent. And I think that the law speaks to an understandable frustration with a broken immigration system. But this isn't the way forward. The law is unconstitutional. I'm confident it'll be challenged in the courts. I'm sad that it's going to take a lot of Arizona taxpayers' dollars to defend this law. And at the end of the day, it's really up to Congress to act to pass tough, fair, and practical immigration laws.
Angela Kelly, she's Vice President for Immigration Policy and Advocacy at the Center for American Progress. Mark Krikorian, you essentially support the law.
Sure. I think it's easy to exaggerate whether it's going to have positive or negative effects. I think the opponents have been wildly irresponsible in their critiques, talking about Nazism and apartheid and the rest of it. But frankly, it's also not a silver bullet that's going to fix the immigration problem. It's a modest step that's going to give police some extra tools in trying to protect public safety and help enforce the laws in Arizona. But ultimately, obviously, Washington does have to act. The question is, what does that mean? Does it mean Congress acts by passing an amnesty, or does it mean the executive branch acts by enforcing existing laws better? And obviously, the latter is what is the case I would make.
And the question comes down to, before we get to changes in federal law, do you see this ruling as racist?
No, clearly not. I mean, the law explicitly, the language of the law itself says you can't base this determination just on somebody's race, ethnicity, or color.
Then how do you approach someone? Why do you single out someone?
Someone makes an illegal right turn.
No,
they don't have a driver's license.
No. Let's rule out any illegal activity.
Right.
Why would a police officer approach someone?
The law specifically says you have to have it's part of lawful contact with a police officer. In other words, it's sort of like a seatbelt law where in a lot of states you can't get a ticket for not wearing a seatbelt. You can only get a ticket if you've been stopped for something else and you're not wearing a seatbelt. So the idea that police officers who are risking their lives every day to protect the public safety are champing at the bit to go and grab people off the street and say, hey, pal, you look Mexican, where's your green card, is silly. And actually, when you look at the who is supporting and opposing the law, Angie mentioned that the chiefs of police and essentially the suits in the police departments are against it. The actual police officers' unions, though, the ones who would actually are on the street enforcing the law in Arizona, have supported the bill.
Mark Krikorian, he's at the Center for Immigration Studies. Do join us, 800-433-8850. Laura Meckler, you wanted to jump in.
No, I just think that one of the things that's a nuances here of this law has to do is what is sort of lawful, normal contact with the police. So, for instance, I think one of the concerns is that if someone is reporting a crime or is a victim of the crime, they may have some interaction with the police, and that would be the kind of situation where somebody might be asked to show their documentation. That's, I know, one of the concerns that people have brought up about that. I guess the idea isn't that you're just supposed to be able to pluck people out for no reason at all, but I don't know, Mark, I'd be interested to hear from you about would this cover situations where, you know, someone's in the park making a lot of noise. Let's say it's not against the law, but the police would come over, say what's going on, and in the course of that conversation, ask for documentation.
Okay, before Mark responds, I want to go to Angie.
Yeah, I want to answer your first question about whether this is a racist law or not. I mean, I don't think it's racist if you're the right race. But I think that for the Hispanic community and for the foreign-born community, that they're going to feel like they're the wrong race. And that this is a sweeping law that requires law enforcement and employees of every state agency to determine the immigration status of any individual that they have reasonably suspect could be here unlawfully in the course of normal conduct with them. And that could be playing your radio too loud as you're driving. That could be talking on the cell phone. That could be even when you go in to apply for benefits. It is a sweeping law. And then once you're in that conversation with somebody, asking them to show their legal status, which they may or may not carry that kind of documentation around, I know I don't, then you may search them. You may proceed with a warrantless search. And the citizens of Arizona can sue the police if they think the police aren't enforcing the law. I mean, look, this is a sweeping measure. And I have to disagree with Mark, although I do agree with him on one point. I disagree that it's going to protect public safety. for exactly the reason that Laura indicated. I work with victims of domestic violence for years, Diane, and I can tell you that they will be very fearful to have any contact with the police if they're being abused or if their children are being abused, if anyone in the family or in their neighborhood is undocumented. And that's a reality of how communities are. We don't have all the undocumented people living in one apartment building and all the people with status living somewhere else.
This is one of these sort of the chestnuts of this debate, that if local police get more involved in using immigration law, that somehow illegal immigrants won't come forward. First of all, there obviously is a certain reluctance by illegal immigrants to come forward to the police because they're illegal aliens. In other words, that's simply a fact regardless of what local police do or don't do. But there has never been any evidence demonstrating that jurisdictions that adopt what's called the 287G program, where they work with the feds in enforcement, that there's been any drop-off in domestic violence reporting cases, for instance. It just hasn't happened. Maybe it's there. I have not seen it, and Angie would have worked hard to find it if the evidence could have been there. The police involved in these kind of local federal agreements make very clear that witnesses and victims are not, their immigration status is not something they're interested in. And that's the way police work works all the time. For instance, if you're a homicide investigator and there's a streetwalker who saw a crime, you tell them, look, I'm not from Vice. I just want to know what you saw last night. That's the way policing works in any area, including immigration. What some of the opponents are saying is they just don't want illegal immigration to be illegal, and that's a different question.
Mark Krikorian, he is executive director of the Center for Immigration Studies. We'll take just a short break. We'll be back with your calls and comments. And welcome back. We're talking about Arizona's new immigration law, which President Obama had some comments on, Lark Meckler.
Yes, he did on Friday, just a few hours before Governor Jan Brewer signed the law, signed the bill into law. He was quite critical of it and very unusual for the president to criticize a state action. He said that it was misguided. He said it was irresponsible. And he said it undermines basic notions of fairness that we cherish as Americans. So he was very critical of what Arizona did. At the same time, he said that it was this had come because the federal government had failed to pass a comprehensive immigration law, which is something he favors. In fact, Governor Brewer said much the same. She said the federal government has failed to deal with this problem, and now we have to. We're left with this. Our state's being swamped by illegal immigrants, and we need to deal with this issue. So it was a curious situation where you had the woman signing the bill into law and the president very critical of the law, both blaming the federal government for failing to deal with the problem.
What do the polls indicate about how Arizona residents feel about this new law?
Well, Rasmussen did a poll and found 70% of Arizona voters supported it, and 60% of voters nationwide supported it. So, I mean, this is clearly responding to serious public demands. Now, they also were concerned that racial profiling could happen, and abuses of police powers are always possible, which is why we have rules and training and standards.
All right. Here are two comments that were posted this morning on the DR Show website. Vicky wrote, "I am proud of Arizona and the governor for doing the right thing. I watched firsthand as illegals took away my job, medical and educational opportunities. Countries like New Zealand have strict rules on immigration because their legal citizens come first. Immigrants who want to be a part of our country, let them petition the legal way. Otherwise, go home. Petition your own country to take care of you, not my job." On the other hand, someone else wrote in response to Vicky's point, "For Vicky and others that view this as a brilliant law, you support this law, which is clearly racial profiling, is like supporting those laws passed by the Nazis against the Jews. I understand the frustration, but this is not the way to solve this problem. Bad image for the United States." Angie.
Well, look, I agree with Vicky's frustration. I don't agree with the law that Brewer signed, because it's not going to solve the problem, which is the one point that Mark and I clearly agree on. We need tough, fair, practical immigration solutions, and they can only come from the federal government.
And here's a practical question from Brett. He says, if you look like an illegal alien but have been born in the U.S., how do you prove you are here legally? Will you need to carry a birth certificate eventually? Will that apply to all of us? What do you think, Laura Meckler?
Well, I had somebody at my newspaper who's from England asking me whether he was going to be questioned if he goes to Arizona. I think that there, I told him he needed to talk softly because he has quite a strong accent, English accent, though. I think that, you know, that's the question. I think that clearly it seems like under the law that if you are not, even if you were born in this country, you would need to prove it somehow. And I think some of these questions will be answered as this law starts to be implemented. But certainly, even if you're here on a legal visa or you're here with a green card, you would need those proofs of identity as well. So, I mean, we all do have ways to prove that we are American citizens if we need to.
And Mark, how much of the Arizona law do you think is in response to the highly publicized crimes such as the murder of a rancher, the drug violence in the border areas and the major cities?
Yeah, I think that's clearly part of it, but the law wasn't just written after that rancher was murdered by an illegal immigrant. In other words, I think the his murder just kind of added impetus to it. One of the things, the ongoing things that I think is really driving it is the unraveling of order in Mexico. Because right across the border in Sonora and in the rest of Mexico, there is essentially a civil war going on where the cartels are at war with each other and at war with the government. And this really is a different situation from what existed just a few years ago, and I think really raises the stakes in the whole issue of border control.
Angie.
Yeah, look, there is no doubt that we need better control at our border. There is no doubt that Arizona is at the epicenter of what is a broken immigration system. And I would be the first to argue that we absolutely have to strengthen our border control methods. But we are kidding ourselves if we think that that alone, or that the Arizona law alone, is going to solve our broken immigration system. We can't pass state laws that are in a patchwork or piecemeal way trying to address a problem that is the Fed's responsibility. The only way that we can begin to get a handle on this is if we crack down on employers who are hiring folks without status. If we get real about the people who are here illegally, we're not going to deport them all. We need to require them to register, to come forward, to pay taxes, to learn English, and make sure that they don't have a criminal record.
All right.
We absolutely need to put in resources at the border. But moreover, we need to recognize that we don't have an immigration system that deals with the reality that folks want to come to this country. We need them to come with visas, not smugglers, and we need to know who they are. That's the Fed's responsibility. That is not something that the state can accomplish successfully.
And, Laura, the question becomes now, how does what Arizona has done push the Obama administration into taking action?
Well, the situation in Washington is a complicated one. President Obama and many Democrats in Congress would like to see another try at comprehensive immigration overhaul legislation, where there would be several elements of it, including a path to citizenship for people who are here illegally, something that critics called amnesty, including a guest worker program, some border security measures. They would like all of that to happen. There is very little, if any, Republican support for that right now. So the question becomes, there had been a quiet effort going on to try to build Republican support for that. Senator Lindsey Graham was working on a bill. He wanted some more Republicans. He did not want to be the only one. And they were working on trying to make that happen. And it was kind of happening behind the scenes. All of a sudden, though, in the last week, this has sort of burst into a much higher priority, a much more public priority, and that we could talk about why there's a lot of political reasons why that may be the case. But the result of that has been that the Democrats seem interested in moving this legislation even without Republican support. The problem with that, of course, is that you can't really move legislation without Republican support. You cannot pass something through the Senate unless you have some Republican votes.
And it's also affecting the climate change bill.
Exactly, because as it turns out, Lindsey Graham is the only Republican on the climate change bill as well. And Senator Reid had agreed in a meeting with Nancy Pelosi, the Speaker of the House, last week that they were going to prioritize immigration over energy. When that was reported, Senator Graham was furious.
He went ballistic.
He really did. And he said to a colleague of mine in the halls of Congress, am I supposed to write all the bills? What bills are we talking about here? And there is no immigration bill yet, which he's right. There is no legislation actually written even. So the question, he was very frustrated by that. Here he is trying to work on energy, and he felt like the rug was pulled out from under him for a political purpose, for the Democrats to appeal to the growing Hispanic bloc of voters, many of whom are very frustrated by the inaction over immigration.
On the other hand, wasn't Lindsey Graham getting an awful lot of flack from Republicans because he seemed to be cooperating with Democrats? So pulling out of the climate change bill, getting absolutely no support from his Republican colleagues, that may have played some role.
Sure,
here.
That may have played some role, but the Democrats sort of made it easier for him to do that. I mean, he was, I believe, all by all accounts, working in good faith towards an energy bill and also separately towards an immigration bill. But he was getting a lot of pressure on both counts. He's also, incidentally, worked with the White House on closing Guantanamo Bay. And he also voted for Sonia Sotomayor for the Supreme Court, the only Republican on the Judiciary Committee. He's somebody who has clearly been willing to work with the White House and with the Democrats, and he did come under a lot of pressure for all of those things. So from his point of view, here he is about to introduce an energy bill, and the Senate Majority Leader says, immigration is more important to me. And he's saying, well, we don't even have any more Republican support for immigration. We don't even have a bill yet. Why are we pushing this to the top of the list? And he said, forget it. Until we work this out, until I'm guaranteed energy is a priority, I'm gone.
So Arizona steps forward and shakes up the whole place. How much, Angie, are members of Congress concerned about the Latino vote?
I think they're hugely concerned about it. Look, this is the fastest growing voting demographic there is, and it's a voting block that's in flux. President Bush enjoyed a very hefty amount of support from the Latino community. That dropped off considerably, and that support went to President Obama in the last election. But it's an interesting thing, Diane, because for the foreign-born who are naturalizing and voting for the first time, they supported Bush and Kerry almost in equal numbers. But then in 2008, they broke very heavily for Barack Obama. But it does show that the foreign-born, who are the closest, like they're on the front lines of the immigration experience, Can go either way. I mean, their values, you could imagine, could be Democratic or they could be Republican, because they're very conservative in a lot of areas related to education, related to religion. And so this is a demographic very much in play, could go either way, but critically important for both parties, I think, to address this issue, right? So polling has showed that the issue of immigration, whether you're a foreign-born Latino or whether you're a native-born Latino, matters a lot. Like 80% are concerned and want to see this issue resolved.
And Mark, you somehow believe that the power of the Latino vote has been somewhat exaggerated.
Well, clearly it's been exaggerated to some degree. I mean, the point is, obviously, it's a growing portion of the electorate. But, you know, frankly, campaign consultants who have an interest in this keep talking it up, and it never, I mean, it grows, but it doesn't quite grow as much as everybody wants it to grow. And Angie's basic point, though, is that the Hispanic vote in general is up for grabs, and that Republicans, you know, they could go Republican or Democrat, and that's basically false. I mean, the Republicans traditionally have gotten between a quarter and a third of the Hispanic vote for a long, long, long time.
What about during the Bush era?
40% of Latinos supported George Bush.
Yeah. Actually, it was more like 38%.
Foreign-born Latinos, it was 48% supported George Bush. Only 52% supported Kerry. It was very, very close. So there is an affinity with the Republican Party. There are conservative Latinos as much as there are liberal Latinos. And I think that's why you've got, look, a lot of, like, the Dick Armey, Tom DeLay, Grover Norquist, conservative talkers and thinkers on this issue have said to the Republicans, if you ever want to sit in the White House again, you need to get on the right side of this issue with the Latino community.
Angela Kelly, she's vice president for immigration policy and advocacy at the Center for American Progress. And you're listening to The Diane Rehm Show. We'll open the phones now, 800-433-8850. First to Effingham, Illinois. Good morning, Courtney. You're on the air.
Hi, good morning.
Morning.
I just wanted to make the point, what I don't understand and I keep hearing over and over and over is that the concern is about stopping people who haven't broken any laws or whatever. But if you're here illegally, you're breaking the law. So police officers that confront anybody, you know, you go into other foreign countries, you go to Africa, you go to countries. I always carry my papers wherever I go in the event that something, you know, that I need to prove that I am indeed an American. And so if you're here legally, you should have a driver's license, probably. That would indicate that you're here legally, whether you have a green card or not. And you should be willing, as long as you're not breaking any laws, what difference does it make?
Yeah, that's actually a good point, because one of the things about the Arizona law that doesn't just incorporate directly from federal law is that one of the provisions is that if you're an alien, a non-citizen in the United States, you're required to have registered with the government. If you didn't, you're committing a federal crime. Also, if you're a legal non-citizen who has gotten, say, a green card or some kind of visa, you are required by a law that's been around for a lifetime, federal law, to at all times have it on your person. This is not something, you know, Yahoo's in Arizona dreamed up. This is something that has been federal law for generations,
right.
And that's all we're talking about.
Let's go now to Atlanta, Georgia. Fram, you're on the air.
Hello, Diane. Thank you very much for taking my call.
Sure.
I'd like to make a comment in regards to, I am a Canadian citizen, and I did get my green card 2 years ago. However, the process took 4 years, and apparently this was one of the fastest ways to get a visa, to get a green card. However, it cost me personally approximately $25,000 and another $1,000 after all the paperwork and legal work to get there. And I think a lot of Americans just don't realize the process and the loopholes, not the loopholes, but the loops you have to jump through to get true citizenship or even become legally here. People want to, I think a lot of the Mexicans want a better life for themselves. I don't think anyone would disagree. But I, you know, apparently I had an easy go, and I felt like, wow, how more difficult could it be to do it legally? And
Laura.
Well, I think there's no doubt what the caller says is true. I've heard the same thing from people that I know that it is a very difficult, arduous process. I think, though, that there are two separate issues here. He's presumably someone who came to this country through legal means and then was trying to go through all the red tape to become a citizen or to get his green card, and that is very hard to do. But that's different than somebody who sneaks over the border and comes without permission and then is sort of living sort of in the corners and in the shadows of American society, hoping not to get caught.
But doesn't he also make the valid point that it costs a lot of money to go through this kind of legalized process?
It is expensive and it's complex. But, you know, frankly, given how broken the situation is and the system is, that's the least of our worries. And I think that's the point that Laura was making. Look, we've got 12 million people living here without status. It's 7 to 8 million workers who many of them are working off the books. Employers are happily not paying them decent wages and are making it so we don't have a level playing field for the American worker. This is not a problem that we're going to solve by deporting everybody. I don't think anybody thinks that that's realistic, and we know that would be massively expensive.
Angela Clearly, Kelly, the Center for American Progress, we'll take a short break, and when we come back, we'll have more of your comments, your email, and messages from Facebook.
National broadcast of The Diane Rehm Show is made possible in part by Vicki and Roger Sant and Island Press, which offers solutions to environmental problems in print, in person, and online at islandpress.org. From the Avis Family Foundation, supporting expanded foreign news online and on air. And from the William and Flora Hewlett Foundation, making grants to solve social and environmental problems at home and around the world. On the web at hewlett.org. This is NPR.
Award-winning singer-songwriter Mary Chapin Carpenter has sold more than 13 million records. Her latest CD explores regret, resilience, and the wonder of the times we live in. The Diane Rehm Show, next hour. Welcome back. Here's an email from Peter in Stafford, Virginia, and we've had several similar to this. He says, prior to the Reagan administration, didn't we have a strong law prohibiting businesses from hiring illegal immigrants? Minimizing those laws brought us cheap labor. I say bring back those laws by passing an illegal employer law and watch the border crossing slow down immensely. Laura Meckler.
It is illegal, of course, for employers to hire people who are here illegally. Many employers sort of look the other way, or, you know, either overtly or covertly. And it's interesting because that's one of the elements that Senators Graham and Schumer are trying to specifically, or at least were trying to specifically address in their framework for legislation they put out. They have a new proposal which would require all American workers, citizens, non-citizens, whoever, anybody who's looking for a job, to have a biometric ID card that would prove they are who they say they are. And they would have to show that when they go and apply for a job or when
and
they get a job.
And what about at airports and the like? Aren't they considering the same kind?
They say
of
that
thing?
It would just be limited to employment. That's one of the concerns of privacy advocates, is that this would become a de facto national ID card, which people have concerns about. But the idea behind this from its sponsors is that this could solve that problem. As long as there are employers hiring people and people who need jobs, the theory goes that there will be people moving across the border, legal or not.
Angie.
I mean, look, I think what Graham and Schumer are struggling with is, you know, how do we have a workable system so that we're verifying people at place of employment? At the point of employment is really when we should make sure that employers are following the rules and that we're hiring people who are here legally. And we don't have an effective system for doing that. And we have 7 to 8 million workers who are here right now working without status. So clearly the status quo isn't working. What we need to do is to have a rigorous employment verification system with databases that are reliable, and make sure that employers follow the rules and only hire people who are here authorized to work and they pay taxes.
All right.
Moreover, we need to deal with the folks who are here illegally and make sure that we require them to register and to pay their taxes and learn English.
Diane, if I could interject, it's really encouraging to hear the advocates of a more liberal immigration policy now defending very tough worksite enforcement rules, because it was only in 1986 that Congress finally prohibited the employment of illegal immigrants, because prior to 1986 it was explicitly permitted to employ illegals. But in the intervening 20 or so years, the supporters of looser immigration policy have fought a scorched earth campaign to prevent the implementation of the law, and the claims now that they're for it are a little bit disingenuous.
Here's an email from Ruby in Chesterfield, Missouri. She says, finding illegals is very hard. Otherwise, we wouldn't have 15 million illegals here all over the country. I am angry hearing President Calderon saying how unfair and prejudicial this new law is. How dare he criticize Americans for trying to uphold our federal law? He is doing nothing to stop the drug trafficking and to close his own borders or to provide enough jobs in his own country to keep his own people employed. Fair point, Mark.
Well, let me speak in defense of President Calderon. He's actually risked his presidency and even his life, potentially, on trying to crack down on the drug trafficking. That said, it really isn't any of his business what American law does. And frankly, I've long said that one real advance in American immigration policy would be if we just lifted wholesale Mexico's immigration policy and imported it into our own law. Because if anything, their immigration policy is much more draconian than anything even I could dream up in my wildest, liquor-fueled imagination.
All right. To San Antonio, Texas. Sarah, you're on the air.
Yes, hi. Mark made a comment earlier regarding police work, that police traditionally do not inquire into immigration status when questioning witnesses or those reporting domestic abuse. But this law would actually require the police or district attorneys to actually ask about immigration status. And if the state agents don't do what the law requires, those accused of a crime can sue those that are doing the prosecuting, discrediting witness, et cetera. I'll take my comment off the air.
Thanks for calling, Angie.
Yeah, your caller is well informed. I mean, look, the law takes us to a whole new level in terms of authorizing police to look at somebody and say, give me your papers. And that, you know, frankly, that isn't American. That isn't the country that we want to be. And it's not going to stop illegal immigration. This law will not diminish our illegal immigration population by one single person.
So South Bend, Indiana. Good morning, Lee. You're on the air.
Yes, Diane. This is a sticky situation. Everybody's talking about the fact that they're waiting for this employee identification and all this other stuff. But what is Arizona supposed to do in the meantime? It's very tough. I mean, if you are not there on the ground and there are people in Arizona that see their jobs being taken away by illegal immigrants all the time, what are you supposed to do, especially if the federal government is doing absolutely nothing, especially when the federal government is very slow at any kind of immigration reform? We understand that the reform is not there. right now. So what are the people in Arizona supposed to do if the federal government is failing them?
All right.
Angie was right, and this relates to this question. What Arizona is doing may not actually reduce the nation's illegal immigrant population much. It probably will some, but not much. What it will do, though, is reduce Arizona's illegal alien population so that illegal immigrants will move to Los Angeles and Salt Lake City instead. Now, from a national perspective, that's not obviously the goal that any of us want, but it helps Arizona.
So, Laura Meckler, considering all of these problems, how quickly do you see the Congress moving on this?
Well, at this point, I think it's possible the Congress will move. Whether they will get to the end game is a whole nother story. Right now, it just doesn't seem like we have a political environment around this issue that is conducive to a bipartisan agreement, and that's what's necessary in order for something to become law. I think the more likely outcome this year is a lot of talking about it and perhaps forcing Republicans to go on record voting against it. But the question is, will Republicans go on record voting for it? And it doesn't, obviously, another year of debate. Some people think that would, some people on the advocacy community think that that would be a good thing in and of itself. Others think it might just set the cause back. It's hard to say where we end up, and it's hard to say what the impact in the end would be on the Republican Party either.
And here's another message posted on our website. He says, I am Mexican American, born and raised in the U.S. It's one thing to expect that an alien is carrying papers, but an entirely different thing to require that I do. If I make a left turn without my signal and the police take me to jail, I will sue for profiling, and so would you, Angie.
Yeah, I think the emailer is spot on. I mean, look, you can't tell looking at folks where they're from. You can't tell their immigration status. I mean, look, I'll give you the snapshot, Diane. We were planning our summer vacation with my mom. My mom is from Bolivia. My mom speaks with a heavy accent. And we were thinking about going to Arizona. My mom loves listening to salsa music blaring from the car that we were going to rent. And she said, no, we're not going to go, because it would be so humiliating to me and to my granddaughters if I got pulled over and asked for papers, because when I speak to police officers, I speak with a thick accent. So that's not where we're going to go on vacation. I think a lot of Latinos, and look, she's a naturalized citizen for 35 years, a lot of Latinos are going to be making that calculation that we aren't welcome, we don't belong. That is not the nation that we are, Diane. That is not the character of this country, to divide people like that and to paint a target on their back.
I thought Linda Greenhouse had an important piece this morning. It's titled Breathing While Undocumented. She says a person is guilty of trespassing, the law provides, by being, quote, present on any public or private land in this state, unquote, while lacking authorization to be in the U.S., a new crime of breathing while undocumented. The intent, according to the state legislature, is attrition through enforcement.
I'll claim credit for that last part, but that is the goal. In other words, it's not to arrest and deport every illegal immigrant. Angie obviously is right that that's not practically possible, even if you wanted to do it. The point is to reduce the illegal population over time. And frankly, over the past 2 years, even before the recession started, the illegal population's been declining.
All right, to Rockville, Maryland. Good morning, Emerson. You're on the air.
Good morning, Diane. Yes, this matter is, you know, very dear to my heart. I am, you know, if you may, an illegal alien myself. And, you know, the struggle that, you know, I and my family have gone through in the past 10 years, you know, is really tough. And I wish the American, you know, people would, you know, realize, you know, that it's easier, you know, for everybody to solve this matter by making illegals, you know, legal. You know, I mean, it's much easier to solve that problem that way. I pay taxes, I employ people, I have a small firm, and I don't leave my illegal life like, you know, many people speak in the media. And I wish, you know, people would realize that like myself, there are many other people like that.
And if illegals were given a chance, they would come out of the shadows and, be responsible citizens.
Emerson, explain to me what your life is like with your family.
Well, it's, to give you an example, my family still lives, overseas. And when my father passed away, I was not able to attend his funeral. That's one thing. My children were born here, and, they can travel, but I can't go with them and, spend time with my family, because I'm not allowed to leave the country. And they cannot come here either because they cannot get visas very easily, when you're trying to get to the U.S. as a tourist. Unless you are a very wealthy person, depending on where you're coming from, you don't get the visa to get here. So, these are some of the barriers. And also, health insurance, for example, just is a very recent debate. I pay my very own health insurance, but I pay, twice as much as an individual would pay just because of my, legal status.
Now, Emerson, does the federal government know that you are here illegally?
I would say that part of the government does. I do pay my taxes, and, I do not have a Social Security number, for example. But there are ways, and I try to comply the best way, I can with, the rules, frankly, I think, the country laws, I don't know if it's, by design or by fault, there are loopholes in there that kind of incentivize, people to do, what's not right. And I don't know if it's, I really don't know how it goes.
Emerson, I thank you for calling this morning. Just to pause for a moment and let listeners know you're listening to the Diane Rehm Show. Angie, what do you think of what Emerson had to say?
I think Emerson is describing a reality of a lot of folks in this country, right? So he's made a life for himself in part. He's obviously learned English. He happens to be paying taxes, which is a good thing, of course. But he can't fully belong. He can't fully integrate into this country. He has children who are U.S. citizens. It really does speak to how broken our system is. And look, if you set aside the politics, you set aside the emotion. I think Americans are infinitely practical and reasonable people. And what they want to see is lawmakers come forward with solutions that are like that. And that would take someone like Emerson and say, look, you need to get on the right side of the law. You need to register. I want to be sure you're paying taxes. I want to square away your Social Security number. You need to, and he, in fact, has learned English, which is very good. But, that to me is a solution forward. What Mark is suggesting is we make life so miserable for people and all the collateral damage of people like my mom and the other callers. So miserable for them, so that people will leave. And I think that's a fantasy. And I would rather get a realistic solution moving.
What a lot of the people who oppose this kind of legislation, though, that Angie is promoting, is that they fear, okay, so you'll make these people, give them amnesty, quote unquote, allow them to stay here. All right. But what happens then with the next wave, that a whole nother group of people are going to come in and that they that it just will never end. And then we'll be hearing another bunch of emotional stories, 15 years from now. So I think that Mark, you could speak better than I can. But I think that that's what a lot of the fear is, that we're never really going to be serious about border security.
And I think that's clearly why the immigration bill failed in 2007, for instance, regardless of what I think about amnesty. The reason it failed is because nobody believed the government's promises of future enforcement in exchange for amnesty today. This is why, even if you have Angie's perspective, you need to have the enforcement first to develop the credibility. And even this administration understands that. That's why, even though they've gutted some enforcement programs, they have continued others more than some of the advocacy groups would like. The question is, how do they develop that credibility? And the problem is they have so much ground to make up that it's going to take a while before anybody gets there.
So how long do you think it will be before we catch up as the federal government with Arizona?
Well, look, I mean, Mark is spot on that this is a complex issue. It's not just simply about dealing with the people who are here. It is about tough enforcement. And it is exactly what Laura is pointing to. How do you make sure that in the future we don't have another big illegal population? The way we do that is to ensure that the future flow of people who come to this country are screened. There are people who are coming to join close family members. There are people who are coming to do jobs in industries where we need them and not hurting arriving U.S. workers, and they're coming with visas and not smugglers. We don't have a future flow immigration system that appropriately assesses what's in our country's interest. That's on lawmakers' shoulders to make that happen. If you have those elements, though, where you know who's coming in the future and we need them, where you get people out of the shadows and require them to register and pay taxes, and where you've got tough enforcement that cracks down on employers who are hiring folks illegally, that's the way forward. And no one is proposing that from Mark's side of the table, but I think that's exactly where Schumer and Graham were going, and that's exactly where lawmakers need to end up.
Angela Kelly, she's at the Center for American Progress. Mark Krikorian, he's Executive Director of the Center for Immigration Studies. Laura Meckler, she's White House correspondent for The Wall Street Journal. I want to thank you all so much. This is clearly a subject people are very concerned about, and it will now be left to our lawmakers on Capitol Hill to do something. Thanks for being here.
Thank you, Diane.
And thanks for listening, all. I'm Diane Rehm.
The Diane Rehm Show is produced by Sandra Pinkard, Nancy Robertson, Jonathan Smith, Susan Neighbors, Denise Couture, and Monique Nazareth. The engineer is Toby Schreiner. Dori Annisman answers the phones. Visit drshow.org for audio archives and CD sales, transcripts from SoftScribe, and podcasts. Call 202-885-1200 for more information. Our email address is drshow@wamu.org. This program comes to you from American University in Washington. This is NPR.